Welcome to Globe and Crown Radio, season number 3, episode number
4.
Episode 4, Gaming Anthology, Tournament Edition. Nailed it.
Got it.
As you could tell from our title, this time we're going to talk about our all-time favorite video games. Let me tell you something about video games.
Tell me, right now.
I love them.
Why don't you marry them?
Last month, I went and bought an Xbox One, which even though it'd been out for 4 years, was new to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have been having a blast. Just playing it, go out in the garage, the Tarantula Lounge.
Yeah, give it its proper title. It's not just the garage.
It's not. It's the T-Lounge. I turn on the big screen TV. I turn on the Batman game. There's a giant, like, 3-foot Batman just ready to fight crime. I'm just running around kicking bad guys in the face. And they're like, no! And I'm like, sorry about you. I'm Batman. Deal with it. Deal with that!
Cool.
It terrifies people.
I mean, it would terrify. Wouldn't it you?
Hey, it's the Bat! That's what they say all the time. It's the Bat!
So, well, let's jump in. So we're talking about games, video games in particular.
Yes.
And we're jumping back into time to something. This is something that made a particular mark on us. Mm-hmm. Just like the poems, just like the comics that we talked about. This is something that stood out. And I know we broke it into different categories. What category is it you wanted to start with?
The category overall is fun. First time I remember playing video games was me and my dad would play Mario Brothers all the time.
Oh, nice.
And Duck Hunt. And my dad could do the thing in level 3 or whatever where you could like keep hitting the duck, keep jumping on the duck and you get all the lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I've always liked games. I had the Nintendo, Super Nintendo. I did not have a Sega. Two in your face, Bart Simpson-y.
Yeah.
Did not
it,
have the
it
Genesis.
It had the, what was it? It had the like the blast processing. That was yeah. what they advertised. It didn't mean anything. It was nothing.
They were like, Super Nintendo's for nerds.
Basically,
cool
yeah.
kids drink Mountain Dew and play Sega.
Yeah.
I didn't have the GameCube, but I had a PlayStation, PlayStation 2, Xbox, 360.
Yeah. Now you got the Xbox
One. Now I've got the Xbox One.
You've got all of their generation. Well, I guess you don't have the Scorpio, which I don't even know what that is, but it's apparently a new thing.
Yeah. Always loved video games, even though there was a period of my adult life where I was like, I can't, I'm too busy. But it was just a sad time in my life. Here's what I like. I like Taco Bell, I like video games, I like comic books, and I like writing.
There you go.
And if I'm firing all those cylinders, I'm having a good life.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's open it up. Let's start.
Let's go.
With a category I'll call the gateway category.
Okay.
Because this is a kind of game where you don't have to like spend countless hours playing, but you can if you want, and that is shooters.
All right, let's get into it.
Sometimes called FPS, first-person shooter.
Are we not going to talk about any third-person or cover shooters?
You can talk about any kind of shooter you want, including Duck Hunt, which was the OG shooter, I guess.
It was indeed,
yeah. I remember the Terminator 2 arcade game was a fun shooter. Where you were trying to save John Connor in that beat-up truck.
Yeah.
And the Terminators were just running right next to him, and then they'd look at you with their creepy skull faces.
Yeah, I remember that
I did not
very
like
well.
That. I did not like that one bit. So this category is you're running around shooting stuff.
All right, sounds good. This seems like a real obvious choice for me, but the definitive shooter that defined all of the shooters that I played was Halo. So Halo was a first-person shooter that was released on Xbox One. It was one of the launch titles, if I remember correctly.
So this was like 2001?
Yeah, this has been a good while back. I remember a friend of mine at church came. We went to the Thanksgiving lunch or whatever, dinner at church. I walk in with my parents, and my friend Tanner comes over, and he says, hey, man, my dad works for Microsoft, and he just got an Xbox, and I've got it, like, at the house right now.
Hey-o!
And I immediately said, I'm done with this. I don't want Thanksgiving dinner from church. I want to go play Xbox. And so we got in the car. Like, literally, I walked in, he said that, I got in the car, and we left. We got home, and we played Halo, and I was just, like, floored. Yeah, it's just the tightness of the actual gunplay. Because, I mean, having come from GoldenEye, it was like when you moved with the analog stick, I mean, you could move it just a little bit, and you would move just a little bit. Or you could move it really far, and you would go really fast. And it was just something completely different than anything I'd ever really played before. But I think that anybody had ever really played before. So it was really the first big console shooter. It was incredibly well done.
So it was well done, and the thing I remember the most about it is, at that time, like people in our youth group, you could link up 4 Xboxes. So you could have 16 people playing at once, like on different teams. We would just like stay up all night, and there would be so much Mountain Dew and Doritos.
And pizza.
And they would just smell like farts and BO.
It's gross, yeah.
Some of the most fun nights I remember in high school and early college were...
That's really what took it over the top. Being able to play that and get online with the ultimate successor to Halo, which is Halo 2, which is really my golden age. That was when I was the best at online video games that I think I will ever be. You know, you were able to get on, you were able to hop on with your buddies, you got Xbox Live, which was just like the, I mean, I had a lot of difficulty getting rid of my Xbox Live thing when I finally canceled it because I no longer had an Xbox. I was like, my little gamer tag has my number next to it for how many years that I've been an Xbox Live member. And I was like, I can't give that up. But ultimately, I did.
You
but
can keep your gamer points if you ever, because your account still lives. So if you ever get a system.
I can bring it back.
Because that's what I did after it had been like years since I had an Xbox. I turned it back on. I saw my points and stuff. I was like, oh, yeah.
You remembered who you were, the times that you used to have. So, yeah, I mean, Halo just had, it was the beginning of something. It continues to come out to this day. I mean, as far as I understand, on Xbox One, it's still a, it's still a platform
seller. On a scale of 1 to 10... 1 being the worst player, 10 being like the best. Where are you in your prime and where am I in my prime?
Are we comparing this to like global or just local group?
Dealer's choice.
Okay, so local group, I was probably like an 8 or a 9 at my best against my actual friends that I played with on a regular basis, or even just against like scrub people online or whatever.
Yeah, you would but get just like with. A casual online game, where would you be?
I would be up in the top.
Okay.
Top performers.
And where would I be?
Very low.
So we would be playing it in Nathan and our buddy Josh, who we would go to Major League Gaming events to. Major League Gaming is like people that make money in a professional video game circuit. We would go pay money, drive to Dallas, and watch them play video games. Like hundreds of dollars we would pay.
Yeah, it was
some of the most fun trips.
Yeah, they were adults. Incredible. We had Snickerdoodles. It's 2 Snickerdoodle cookies with a Snickers bar in between.
Yeah.
That was an invention on that.
Josh was really good.
Josh was a little bit above me. Out of Nate the local really group, good. Josh would have been like a 10.
As soon as I would start playing, I would get lost. Everyone would be running, like fighting a battle. I would like fall out of the car. I'd be just walking around trying to chase them. Eventually, I'd get within like eye shot of them. So it's me just running around and jumping, getting lost in the game. And then somebody would just shoot me in the face immediately.
Yeah.
So Halo is not that high on my list because I'm awful at it.
Well, so what was your shooter?
Mine was probably Rainbow Six Vegas.
Oh, yeah. We played a lot of that together, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I played, my college roommate Danny had that game, too. So we would all play. And maybe Adam, who we used to go to church with.
Mm-hmm.
Rainbow Six is based on a Tom Clancy book series. And it's a little more tactical in nature. Halo is more like fantasy based. And in Rainbow Six, you could duck behind stuff. Real life loadouts because it's military style, right.
And you had the your life was significantly less than like Halo. You had shields, so you could take like quite a bit of punishment before you really died, unless you got shot straight in the head.
Yeah.
Versus Rainbow Six, it was
you can do coordinated attacks together, where like someone will throw in a flashbang, and then someone like blows a door and runs in and shoots the people after the flashbang.
Breaching clear.
That's the one I had the most fun on because my friends played it, and also I was better at it. Ton of fun playing Halo, but I've never been good at Halo in my entire life. Next category, let's go action-adventure / open world.
Okay. My current obsession, kind of, is Zelda Breath of the Wild. So I picked up a Switch with money I got for my birthday back in April. Breath of the Wild is just amazing. It's one of those games that they've had them for a while now that the technology has improved to the point where when you see something, you can go to it. A lot of games have had that, where it's like, oh, there's a mountain. I could probably get on top of that. But Zelda actually puts stuff on that mountain that you would actually want to go and find. So a lot of games, like I said, have taken the technology and said, okay, well, you can go to that because that's something that people have been clamoring for, is anything that I can see, I want to be able to go to. But it's been really hard to populate all of that huge amount of space with anything that people would actually care to find or look at. I mean, there was no sense of exploration other than just going to see it. Zelda makes you want to climb up that mountain. And it's just amazingly well done. The music's good. It's probably the least strong of the series because it doesn't have a dedicated soundtrack. It's actually got more like the Skyrim or whatever thing where it blends the music as it needs to into whatever thing that you're doing. So if you get into combat, the music that was playing just ramps up and changes a little bit so that it becomes, you know, the combat music. And then when it's done, it switches.
Oh, that's cool.
It's real neat the way that it works, but it's not like a distinctive, you know, here's a track.
Can you describe how big the world is?
It's really, really big.
I mean, like, is it the size of Round Rock? Is it actually that much space?
If you tried to run from one side of the world to the other across the longest, you know, the width-wise of it, in-game time, that would probably take you, I mean, I would guess 20 to 30 minutes. And your run speed is really not, you know, that quick. So, I mean, it's easily the size of, like, the greater Round Rock area, I would say. I mean, maybe that may even be a underestimating, I don't know, but it's huge. It's a massive location, and it's got anything from snowy areas to desert areas to beach and ocean to rainforest.
And there's dynamic weather changes.
Yeah,
and
there's you'll get rain, you'll get snow, desert, you'll get sandstorms, and all of those things affect you in a way that actually matters. So there's not hunger like in the Minecraft survival mode or whatever. You don't actually get hungry, although there's food that you can eat. That mainly restores either your health or it gives you the ability to, you can make food that allows you to be stronger or take more damage. And it's like Red Bull, I guess. You can Link and make Red Bull. Zelda being huge, the world being so big, what's really nice is the fact that all of that actually like affects you to some degree as well. Like when you go to the desert area, you have to change your loadout. You have to change your equipment. You have to change a lot of your stuff because it's going to make a difference if you're in like desert ready gear or not. If you go into the, you know, the snowier areas, you've got to have like bundled up gear and whatnot so that you're actually prepared for the cold. And if you have like a flame weapon, that'll help keep you warm because it's hot, because it's a flame weapon, so it makes sense.
One of the reasons you like this game so much is it's like real life where you have to plan ahead.
I mean, to a degree, you have to plan a little bit, but it's not as like, so there's some of those games like Minecraft and whatever where it's too much. It's asking you to constantly eat because you get hungry, and if you don't, you die. Mm-hmm. This lets you plan in a bunch of different ways. So you can make food that allows you to survive in a cold area. You can carry a torch and still wear what you already had, or you can just find cool gear that allows you to walk through a snowy area, and then you can carry whatever the heck you want. You can eat whatever food that you want. It allows you to be able to approach so many of the different like puzzles and combat situations and everything else in ways that are radically different than maybe you had to in the past. Before, when you got the boomerang, that was the only thing that you could use to complete that temple or whatever, you know,
right,
that they had the puzzle. It was all built around that. Well, now, since you can complete anything in whatever order you want, they allow you to kind of go into it, and they're prepared that, okay, well, if this guy doesn't want to actually solve the puzzle the way that, you know, the classic way would have been, you can work your way around it. So there's been numerous times where I couldn't figure out how to solve it the correct way necessarily, but I figured out a smart enough way to like bypass it. And sure enough, it worked and allowed me to solve it and move on to the next thing. So it's one of those things where it really rewards like sideways creative thinking in a way that a lot of those games don't necessarily do. Sometimes they'll let you go everywhere. Sometimes they'll let you do some of this stuff, but they still have a very specific design on how you're supposed to complete things. And Zelda doesn't do that. It's one of those games that makes you feel smart when you think, I wonder if this thing will work to like do the thing that I'm trying to do rather than the thing that they clearly want me to do. And then it does. So it's like you can find wood and you can find flint, and you can drop the wood and the flint on the ground and then strike it with a metal weapon and it'll start a campfire, and then you can just like sleep anywhere or whatever. The game never tells you this specifically, but it's like, okay, I just want to be able to stop here, and I can. And it's like, oh, it worked. Like, this thing worked.
Would this kind of game even have been possible before now?
No. I mean, the technology required to make everything happen that's happening.
Yeah, it's hard to describe unless you, like, sit down and play one of these games how involved they are. I mean, it's almost like The Matrix.
It is, yeah. I mean, because, like you said, there's weather systems, there's enemy artificial worlds, intelligence, yeah. There's all the stuff that you're carrying on you and what you're wearing and how that affects, you know, the enemies that are around you and everything. Because there's things that you can wear that cause the enemies not to notice you as much. And so it's all of these things are having to be thought of at the same time. And it wouldn't have been possible that much longer ago, especially to look the way that it does, because it looks incredible and it runs, you know, buttery smooth. But yeah, let's jump to you.
This one's hard because there could be a lot of games that would be in this category.
Yeah, I mean, Grand Theft Auto's in there, you know, your Elder Scrolls games.
Yeah, like Skyrim.
Uncharted.
Open world would have to be Mass Effect, even though I put in a ton of hours on Skyrim, which is kind of like a medieval fantasy world game where you have magic and, like Nate was saying on Zelda, you can just like run around and kind of do whatever you want. Or Fallout Vegas, which is like kind of a retro, it's post-apocalyptic, but it's got like a retro 1950s space look. But you're just running around in the ruins of Vegas and you can kind of do whatever you want and make alliances. And there's like Mad Max type people and like fancy people and robots and stuff. So those games are really fun and they're just kind of the same thing. They're huge and you kind of get lost in the world. You can do whatever you want. You don't even really have to follow the storyline if you don't want to. There's plenty of stuff to do. But I think overall my favorite open world, I would say the Mass Effect series then would be my favorite open world games. And we've talked about these on here before just because I love them so much. But the way some people feel about like Star Wars or Star Trek or Harry Potter, I feel about the whole Mass Effect world. Where you have this old Lovecraftian enemy almost that just kind of emerges out of time and comes to destroy you. And you have to build this. I mean, it's kind of more of a fantasy skeleton of it more than anything. Because you've got to assemble your team. Everyone's got different skills. You all come together for this common goal. There's got to be sacrifices. I mean, it's almost more like Lord of the Rings than it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anything. This like ancient evil that you and your friends have to assemble together and fight. Yeah. Sure. So it's a sci-fi world and it's in the future and you're kind of like a grizzled space marine and you can choose if you want to be a good guy or a bad guy. And there's a lot of like dialogue that takes place and you can try to charm your way into brokering peace or you can just be a down and dirty lying fighter or an honorable fighter, whatever you want to do. So kind of what Nate was talking about with the choose your own adventure thing, but in space.
Yeah, the Renegade choices were really nice in that too, compared to like the Knights of the Old Republic or stuff like that, that were the choose either options in the past, where one was very clearly just like straight up evil.
Yeah.
And then one was good. With the Renegade, you always still felt pretty much like you were trying to do the right thing. You were just kind of a bad A while you were doing that.
You were more like a Bruce Willis diehard instead of like a...
Whatever it takes.
Captain America.
Right.
Yeah, so in the dialogue options or the action options, sometimes you could choose either Paragon, which is like Captain America, or Renegade, which is more like Han Solo, Bruce Willis in Die Hard style, John McClane style.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there was like all these different races and of aliens that they made and histories for the planets and their wars and all that stuff. And as you could tell from three seasons of podcasting, Nate and I are both into that kind of thing. So
yeah, absolutely.
There are four Mass Effect games. I just bought the newest one today, but of the original trilogy, I probably played each one three times. So I've probably played at least like 400 hours.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Because each one probably I put in like 60 or 70 hours. Yeah, 400 to 600 hours probably I put into that game. And when I first got married, I was basically like looking for work. And working from home, and so I would just stay up late with my dog on the couch, and we would just play till like 3 a.m. every night.
Yeah, perfect.
But yeah, that would be my favorite one. Would be the Mass Effect series. 2 in particular is my favorite.
Was two the one where he like is dead and they're or not really dead, but they like reconstruct him to some degree?
Yeah, no,
at
he's
the beginning
dead.
Of it?
Yeah, that in the first one you basically like save the world in Mass Effect 1, and then Mass Effect 2, you die like 4 minutes into the game, and you're just like, whoa, what is going on? I mean, that's not really a spoiler because it's 10 years old, but...
And it's like at the very, very beginning of the game.
So. Yeah, but I mean, it's really like touching because you have put in, like at that point, I had probably put in 120 hours to that character, and you get to build them from scratch, what they look like, how they act, all your choices impact the whole series. And then my dude just died in space alone,
yeah,
like choking because he had no air.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense, but it's like a lot of it's moving. Some of it's hokey, but that's my favorite.
I guess one of the things that you didn't even touch on there, but I think that makes the Mass Effect series up there in tier as well, is the fact that you do have the save transfers.
Yeah.
So what you did in the first game actually affects what happens in the second game and so on to the third game.
Yeah.
So.
And those games, I mean, the first one and the third one probably came out 5 or 6 years apart. So you'd spend a lot of real life time with that person.
Yeah, it was really unique in that I don't know of a whole lot of games that the first game affects the final game in the trilogy. Because it's really difficult to do, for one, I guess, for writing and for coding, yeah, and everything else. It's like, how do I account for all of these possible decisions that are being made? But they managed to do it anyway.
They did.
Although they did have the little issue at the end of the third one.
Yeah, a lot of people hated the ending.
But then they went back and they remade it, apparently.
Yeah.
And you completed the remade ending, correct?
I did. And there's also a what's called DLC, which is downloadable content, which is where they kind of make little extras for the game. And they make one about kind of like a last mission, which I think is actually kind of the true canon ending of the game, where each member of your team, if they were still alive at that point in your game, you go and do like a little kind of fun thing and they reminisce about how things have been the previous 5 years. And then at the very end, basically you have to be in a certain spot for a while because your ship's getting repaired. And there's like kind of like a Ocean's 11 at the end moment, or a Stand By Me moment, where everyone's just kind of standing together looking at the ship. Because you go through the same ship all three games and you're just like, oh man, what a freaking series.
Yeah.
So to me, that's like the real ending of that series.
Yeah.
Because whatever happens after that, I mean, it can be pretty drastically different. Like, you can lose. Like, the good guys can lose.
Yeah, that was absolutely one of the choices, I guess. Because then they added the choice where you could just choose not to choose, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so where you would lose. I mean, it was just done.
Yeah. Which actually, I won't go too much into the details, but it ends up being a very poetic ending, because maybe you lose, but maybe, like, eventually everyone wins.
Yeah.
But
it's
not
a really
in the
good
immediate
series.
Future, yeah.
So do we have one more
category
that we want to jump to?
Which probably is my favorite gaming category overall, which would be RPGs, role-playing games. And role-playing games are basically, they're all kind of started off like Dungeons and Dragons, which came from military simulations, where you have a character and you give them certain attributes. And as you go through the game, just like Dungeons and Dragons, the more missions you complete, the more quests you complete, your character gets better attributes. So you can be like, get smarter, get stronger, get tougher. These translated into computer games that were basically just copies of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And then it's grown out where pretty much every game has an RPG element now. Even like a sports game where you complete certain things, your character gets stronger, faster, more accurate, etc.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mass Effect has a lot of RPG elements, so I kind of struggle to know which category to put it in. But I would say probably Super Nintendo was the first series to have like real ones, although NES
had them as well. Like the original Final Fantasy, but yeah, Super Nintendo was definitely the birth of like the real RPG that was long. It wasn't just like, you know, you couldn't beat it in 10 hours or whatever. It was actually multiple hours.
What people call like the JRPG, the Japanese RPG. So that would be probably my favorite genre of game, even though now it's become pretty expansive to where almost every kind of game has RPG elements. Typically, it's about like an epic quest. A person or a ragtag group kind of comes together to try to defeat some big ultimate evil. And they're pretty expansive, different environments. You meet people along the way. You talk to people, build coalitions sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, they can go anywhere from like a couple of people trying to fight against, you know, a larger single enemy or big army to there are certain games that are RPGs. One, actually the game that I'm going to talk about, where it's actually armies versus armies. I mean, you've still got your own character that you're going on, but there's army level attacks that are happening together, and you actually feel like you're somewhat in control of a whole group of people going against a whole group of people, which is really cool.
Probably I got into RPGs to a certain extent because you were, and I had another friend named Jason that was into them in middle school. So y'all two were my gateway into RPGs. But what is your favorite?
So my absolute favorite all-time RPG is a JRPG, a Japanese role-playing game. It was from the original PSX, PlayStation 1, but it was...
So this would have been mid-90s?
Yeah, so this was it was actually the sequel to a game that is probably the game I've beaten the most times out of any game that I've ever played. But is Suikoden 2. Suikoden 1 was an incredible game as well. It was actually the first PlayStation game I ever owned. I bought my PlayStation at Sears. I saved up my money like all summer. I went to Sears with my parents at the mall. I went in, I got the PlayStation, and I saw like the only game that I wanted was this game, Suikoden. And I knew that I wanted it because I had read about it in like a Nintendo Power. It wouldn't have been a Nintendo Power. I guess it would have been whatever Game Informer was back then. But
yeah,
maybe EGM, Electronic Gaming Monthly, I think it may have been the magazine. And they had like the best RPGs coming out. And they just said that Suikoden was the best possible game that would remind you of your nostalgia, which I was a kid. So, I mean, like my nostalgia was... like it literally just happened. Like it wasn't something
happening every day.
I wasn't looking back, you know, decades past. It was the Super Nintendo era that I had literally just graduated from. So I found that the box art was real weird. I remember it kind of dark and evil looking on Suikoden, and so I was worried that my parents were going to not be too pleased with the fact that I was picking it up. Back then, you didn't really worry about games. There wasn't all the like violence in video games makes people crazy. Yeah.
Everyone back then was worried, especially in the South, was like, is this satanic?
Yeah.
Like anything like fantasy related or anything, like is this the devil? Is
it, yeah. There was a little devil looking guy on the front of it. You know, I remember it was like some weird enemy too. I don't know why they chose that for the box art, because it was like a guy that you fought, like a regular enemy, regularly occurring enemy, in like the first 30 minutes of the game and you never saw him again. Suikoden series, the reason that I liked it and why it sticks out as a game that's just incredible to me over, you know, all this time afterwards. Suikoden, the first one, and then and what really kind of came into its head with the second one, you were a character, you know, this guy, an unnamed hero that you actually got to name yourself, so you got to kind of like insert yourself a little bit into this character. And then there was this huge group of people that you could collect to fight these huge battles or whatever that you fought with. Your character was like the destined chosen star or something like that. I think it was actually either a Chinese or a Japanese legend about these 108 stars of people who like fought against some emperor who was bad.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so it was actually based on like a real folklore to some extent, but the stories within the actual system were in the games were completely unique to the game itself. Your guy is trying to gather all these people. There's 108 total characters that you can join with, including yourself. So you've got 107 people to go. And just the fact that like the other games that you had played or the other games that I had played up to that point, you may have had like eight people.
Yeah.
I think Final Fantasy III was one of the bigger games, and you had like maybe 10 and you could swap, you know, people out and whatnot. But this was 108, of which only I think like 60 or 70 of them could actually be used in combat, you know, directly. And the rest of them provided other little various things around you. You built like a headquarters, which was also one of the things I thought was really cool.
I love that.
You built like
one of the Assassin's Creed's had that.
Yeah. And it's become a more popular thing is like this base building thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the big things around even like Minecraft is like people like building a space and just having it and customizing it. And a lot of the like iPhone games are around like doing the similar type things.
Or home improvement projects. I mean, that's kind of a primal thing. We like to have our...
We just want to make our space and make it better and unique and to ours. This was one of those games that very early on kind of introduced that. You could collect all these different people and like the allowed you to have weird parties that you wouldn't have had like otherwise. You didn't just have like your standard white mage who healed people, your other person who just like hit really hard but didn't do anything else. I mean, you had those, but you had so many people you could choose from. You could have a whole group of just like really weird people. What was cool too is talking about Mass Effect, this was the first game that I'd ever played where stuff translated from the first game to the second game. So if you had a save at the end of the first game...
Oh, Suikoden 1?
Yeah, it actually went to the second game and it would affect it to some smaller, less degree. So you were able to recruit your character actually from the first game into the second game, and he would come and fight. And so,
that's cool.
It was really neat. It was like and he came in and he was like a bad A. So it was like you felt really cool. Like, oh, this guy that, you know, I've spent all this time making really awesome is able to come in and be really awesome in this game as well. But the scale of it was just really cool too. I mean, so many of the games was a small party of people trying to fight against this like one big bad, or maybe they're going against an entire army, but it's really just four of them. I mean, because you had the 108, it made it feel like you had a huge group that was actually going.
Ocean's 108. That would have been a longer movie.
Yeah. But you also have like a you know, thousands of unnamed mooks, and you have these huge like army battles that you actually engage in where you're, units are not just the one or two or three guys that are in that unit, but they're actually comprised of a whole bunch of like mook soldiers as well. And so you have these, you know, strategic kind of war game combats where you're actually going army versus army, invading a city, you're trying to lay siege, you're trying to survive siege. So the scale of it was just way bigger than any other game that I'd played. It actually had a lot more of the like Game of Thrones kind of feel to it, where there was more armies going against each other, there were betrayals. There was a lot of political drama, which was really interesting. There was some religious drama, which was interesting. It kind of felt like the first serious jump up from kind of more the classic, you know, kind of pulp stories that you almost got out of some of the Final Fantasies and whatnot on the Super Nintendo system. So I think that's why it sticks around for me, just because the scale of it was huge. The music was incredible. It was 2D sprite work. So like everything was going to 3D then. It was like, you know, we got the PlayStation. We're going to go to 3D games. It's going to be awesome. Final Fantasy VII had done it. And it's like, look how cool it looks. This was all 2D sprite work, looked like, you know, anime drawings and whatnot. But it was beautiful. Like they'd really, because they had so much space, they could really put in a lot more work on the sprite work.
Yeah. And I think developers make a mistake. I think style and aesthetic goes a lot further than just like making it look as realistic as possible.
Right, absolutely.
I think people miss that, and that's one of the things I think Nintendo's always gotten. Anyway, sorry.
But ahead. Yeah, so I mean, that's really what made it stick out for me and really stay even this far down the line. It was another one of those games that was really hard to get rid of. But I think you can get it on like the PlayStation, you know,
or maybe even your phone or something.
Yeah, probably at this point.
Well, maybe not C-Coden, but I know like a lot of the Final Fantasy games you can download for like $9 on your phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or more, actually. It's surprising what they're willing to get out of you for nostalgia. But
yeah.
Yeah, so RPG for you.
For me, it's also an older game. Mine was on Super Nintendo, Earthbound.
Oh, there it is.
Which I think was called Mother 2.
Yes, it was Mother 2 in Japan.
And it was on the Super Nintendo, and it was a what do you call it when something's not normal? Kind of an anomaly for me to get a role-play game at that time. I don't think I had really gotten any. I got it because the box was giant.
It's so big, yeah.
Because the box was like the size of a phone book, because the box comes with the normal like Super Nintendo game, but you also get a guidebook.
Yeah.
And the guidebook was awesome. It was like a travel magazine.
Yeah, I remember that.
But it gave you maps. And there are a lot of RPGs where you can get like a guidebook, but you have to pay for it separately, and it's made by a third party. This game came with its own guidebook that told you what all the characters were like. Aesthetically, it looked like a cartoon, and the music was amazing. Moving, but it was whimsical.
Yeah.
And frankly, a lot of it was ripping off popular bands.
Yeah.
Like there was like, I know one of them is like a Journey song. And it's a very innocent game, but it's very profound at the same time, and I think it uses that innocence very well. So you're just like a boy. You're just a kid. Your name is Ness. You're at home. You live in a town called Onet. And then there's this like meteor that comes down to your town. It's the middle of the night and everyone's kind of scared. You kind of go around exploring outside and you can talk to all these different characters and like the police and your mom and dad. You can talk to them. I think if you had a little sibling. You start off and your only weapon is a baseball bat. And you have to fight like angry birds. A bird is upset at you. And then you kind of explore the town a little bit and figure out what's going on with the meteor. And then that sends you on an adventure. So you recruit other kid friends along the way to help you. I guess maybe the analogy now would be kind of like Harry Potter. It's really sweet. So you make friends. And at big moments, this little photographer, it's very whimsical. This photographer comes down and takes a picture of you and your friends. You're all doing like the peace sign or waving or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wherever you go in the town, like wherever you go in the world, I mean, whether it's there's like a cool one where you get a submarine, like there's a nerdy kid you recruit that has a submarine, I think. And then there's like a dinosaur world, and there's like a basically a Japanese world. and you recruit all these kids from all over the place. There's a Scotland, I want to say. Really, you're just kind of, you're a kid making friends along the way and kind of figuring out what it's like to be on your own. You can call your parents all the time and they're like, I love you. We sent you some pizza and here's some money. But the gameplay is fun. It's not very intense ever. It's a childlike look at the RPG world, I think, but it's very emotionally touching, and it's been a fan favorite. And if you've seen Nintendo's announced, just like they came out with that tiny Nintendo that had built-in games, the Super Nintendo version of that will have Earthbound on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
You can also, if you have like a Wii or something, you can download it, I think.
The Wii U has it available for virtual console, yeah.
Yeah, so I think a lot of these games you can probably get on some other console or at least on an emulator or something online. But
yeah, absolutely.
That one, even though like Final Fantasy VIII I love, VII was really good. There are a ton of RPGs I've put in a lot of time on, but that old Nintendo game is still my favorite.
Yeah, Earthbound is the reason I bought a Wii U, which sounds stupid, but like buying the Earthbound cartridge would have cost almost as much as buying a Wii U and then downloading it on the virtual console, because it was so expensive. They didn't really make a whole lot of them. I guess it wasn't that popular. But I remember going to Blockbuster and seeing that huge box and just being like, this is the game that I got to have, because look how big it is. It's got to be good. You know, that's bigger is better always, including in game boxes. But yeah, it's a truly touching game. It's able to do stuff that no other game that I think
I'm going to go ahead and say it. When I beat it, so I just, like I said, it was the first kind of game like that I bought. I got it at GameFellas at North Cross Mall.
Yeah.
North Cross Mall doesn't really exist, and GameFellas is definitely not in there anymore. I just played it like all day, every day until I beat it. And when I beat it, I definitely cried.
Yeah. I can see that. I mean, it definitely, like, the way that the game ends, without getting into any spoilers, even though these are 20 some odd years old, you know, it really moves you in a way. It's like it actually is able to reach out and make you feel like you're a part. I don't know how to say it without spoiling it, but just if you get a chance to play it, play it. It's not a hard game to play. It's really whimsical and fun, like Joey said. The music's fun. The story's fun. The characters are fun. You know, there's a lot of, if you like popular music from any time that was popular, basically in the past, the music is in there probably somehow or another, which is a big part of the reason that was always the rumors why they didn't localize it or like bring it back after it got localized originally on the cartridge, was that they couldn't get the licensing for all the music. But it's like, it was clearly almost that music, but not exactly.
That's
so
funny.
Yeah, that's a fan favorite here as well in the Killian Heart.
Very good.
But I guess that's all we've got now. Video games are a big part of our thing.
They
still are. Yeah, I still love them too.
I think because we love these big stories. We love heroes' journeys stuff.
And we like being a part of them, I think.
Yeah.
That's the thing that video games let you do that books don't necessarily do. With a book, you can read it, but with a video game, you can do it.
Yeah.
If you ever haven't played a video game, which I can't imagine in this day and age, because almost everything is a video game now, go and play a video game, because it'll probably do you some good. I'm Nate.
I'm Joey.
Cheers.
Cheers.